All right, good morning. This morning's shiur is sponsored by by Yitz Weiss. Wait, hold on, here's the tagline. Shake things up a bit this tax season. It's sponsored by Yitz Weiss CPA, and the breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch.
No breakfast. No breakfast not, today.
It's not
no
sponsored
bagels.
By Bagel
Munch. No, today. Today specifically. In respect
okay.
to the Levi, we're going to fast the next hour.
Okay. Okay, we're starting. We're doing Daf Hey today in Maseches Sukkah. It starts. We're going to start six lines from the bottom on Daf Dalet on the Beis, and we're talking today about the minimal shear of a sukkah, which, as we learned from the Mishnah, was 10 tefachim. Right, a tefach is about 3-4 inches, and so 10 tefachim is about 40 inches. Let's call it. You can't have a sukkah less than 40 inches, and as we'll see in the Gemara, what that means is that the hollow part of the sukkah needs to be 40 inches. It's not just the entire structure, but you need 40 inches space to hang out in, and then the schach starts. If it's lower than that, you're going to have a problem. And the purpose of today's Gemara, the topic of today's Gemara, is to try to figure out what's the source for that. So we're going to start quoting the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Dalet. V'she'ino gvoa asar tefachim, that a sukkah that's less than 10 tefachim is problematic. Minolan, how do we know this? What's the source for this? So Itmar, we have a memra from Rav, v'Rabbi Chanina, v'Rabbi Yochanan, v'Rabbi Chaviva. Four Amoraim, Masnu, they learned the following. And then the Gemara interrupts and says, by the way, Bikula Seder Moed, whenever in Seder Moed, throughout Seder Moed, Kol Ki Haizuga, Chilufei Rabbi Yochanan, U'Ma'ili Rabbi Yonasan. Whenever you have this group of Amoraim, these four, we always swap out Rav Yochanan and put in Rav Yonasan. In other words, throughout Seder Moed, we have a tradition that when we quoted something in the name of these four Amoraim, actually Rav Yochanan wasn't the accurate recollection of who it was. It wasn't Rav Yochanan, it was actually Rav Yonasan. They're close, you know, you just swap the letters. But anyway, back to what they said. They said, Aron Tisha, again, this is the source for 10 tefachim. So they said, how do you learn it? Aron Tisha, the Aron, we know, was 9 tefachim. The Kapores Tefach, and the Kapores, which was the cover of the Aron, itself was 1 tefach. Hare Kanasara. So the entire structure of the Aron and its covering, was 10 tefachim. Uksiv, and we have a pasuk that says, V'no adil chasham, v'dibarti itach, me'al Kapores. The Torah says that Hashem, the Shechina, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu from on top of the Aron, right? So we have the idea of the Shekhinah resting or hovering right on top of the Aron, right above 10 tefachim. Vitanya, and we have another braisa that says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Me'olam lo yarda Shekhinah l'mata v'lo olam Moshe v'aliyahu l'marom. We have a tradition. We know that the Shekhinah never came down to earth. And people, meaning the people that were most likely to interact with the Shekhinah, namely Moshe and Eliyahu, who both had very high-level nevuahs, they never went up to Shemayim. They stayed down on earth. The Shekhinah stayed on top. Shneamar, how do we know this? HaShemayim, Shemayim, LaShem, Ve'aretz Nosam, V'nei Adam. Pasuk from Tehillim that says, the skies, the Shemayim, is the domain of Hashem, of the Shekhinah, and the earth is the domain of people. So Shekhinah never came down. People never went up. And so there are two separate domains. So the idea is, as Rashi kind of pulls this all together, if we know that the Aron and the Kaporis were 10 tefachim, and the Shekhinah hung out around above the Aron, and we know that the Shekhinah never came down to the lower part, so that shows you that 10 tefachim is kind of the domain of the below, and above tefachim is domain of the high, and that shows you that 10 tefachim is kind of the most you can go, the least you could go for it to be considered its own domain.
But the pasuk says, "Ve'aser when aser shitem amotan v'chetzi l'mala." It's 2.5 amot. So where do we get the aser tefachim?
So that's where that. So Rashi explains on the bottom, an ama is 6 tefachim. An ama is 6 tefachim. So if an it's an am and a half, right? That's the idea, right? Right. I should have said that. So the Aron itself is an amma and a half. If an amma is 6 tefachim, which is the generally standard understood. We'll see on Hey Amid Beis, we're going to question that. But if an Amma is 6 Tfachim, so then an Amma and a half is 9 Tfachim, and then you have 1 Tefach for the Kaporis. So that's the idea. If the Aron and the Kaporis is 10 Tfachim, and that's considered one domain, that's the minimum of a domain, so to speak, because we're saying now that the Shekhinah never went below that. Now the Gemara is, and so that's the idea. The Shekhinah must be above 10, and then the minimum shear of its of a domain that's to its own below is 10 tfachim. The Gemara now challenges that a little bit. What do you mean the Shekhinah never went below 10 and people never went above 10? That doesn't sound right. 10 is very short. It's 40 inches. Are you telling me that Moshe Rabbeinu never went up to Shemayim more than 40 inches, or Elio, or all those instances throughout Torah and Tanakh where we talk about Hashem and Moshe interacting in Elio? Is that really true? So we're going to challenge that. The Gemara says, "V'lo yarda Shekhinah l'mata." Is that really true? The Shekhinah never went below 10 tfachim. V'aksiv v'yirid Hashem al Har Sinai. That Hashem came down to Har Sinai. We know there was a very famous instance where the Shekhinah came down to Har Sinai. So the Gemara says, no, l'malo me'asar tfachim. It's true that Hashem came down, the Shekhinah came down, but it was hovering at a height that was higher than 10 tfachim. Furthermore, v'aksiv, there's a pasuk in Zechariah that says, v'amdu raglov b'yomahu al har hazisim, that this is talking about an avua where something bad's going to happen, where the korban's going to happen, and all sorts of bad stuff is going to happen, and Hashem is going to kind of occupy our Zesim and cause bad things to happen. So again, there, l'malo me'asar tfachim. When it says that Hashem's legs, so to speak, come down to our Zesim, it means that they're coming down, but they're not going to go reach below 10 tfachim. And then the Gemara says, v'lo alu Moshe v'Eliyahu amarum. Is it true that Moshe and Eliyahu never went up to Shemayim? V'aksiv u'Moshe ala el ha'elokim. Moshe went up to Hashem, and the Gemara says he might have gone up a little, but it was still lamata me'asar. He's always stayed below 10 tfachim. We have the famous story with Elio going up in the wind to Shemayim, and again the Gemara clarifies lamata me'asar. V'aksiv me'achaz p'nei kisei parsha zalav anano, that he... This literally means he grasps the face of the throne and spreads his cloud upon him. Again, indicating that Hashem is interacting with people. And so Vam Rav Tanchum and Tam Rav Tanchum learned or taught, Melame Shapiresh Shakai Miziv Shechina So, Vananoa Love, that Hashem left his abode above and his cloud was with him. And so that sounds like he was coming. It sounds like the person was kind of interacting with Hashem. So the Gemara again says, "Lamata me'asara." It was below 10. Mikol makoz me'achaz p'nei kisei k'siv. It says that that he was interacting with the throne, which makes it sound like there was interaction. I mean, one wasn't staying below and one wasn't staying above. Yishtarbu ve'yishtarbu b'lei kisei ad asara. So the answer was the kisei was coming down to below 10, v'nakat bay, up to 10, and v'nakat bay, and he grabbed onto the kisei. Fine, that's the whole back and forth trying to challenge this idea that Shemayim, that the Shekhinah doesn't come below 10, and people don't go above 10. But the Gemara satisfies all those questions and leaves off with this assumption that there's a clear delineation between Lamata Me'asara and Lamala Me'asar. Fine. The whole of Daf Hei kind of talks about these dimensions and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily the most Geshmak Gemara. I was listening to Rabbi Rosner's shir last night to try to find something more Geshmak. So the one thing he brings on this Gemara is a halachic shaila that's related that gets off the ground, so to speak, because of this discussion of the clear distinction between the Shekhinah above 10 and people's domain being below 10, which is that there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that when we do Kiddush Levana, that it's an instance of Kabbalas Pnei Shekhinah, right? That's part of the Nusach of Kiddush Levana, as we say, that it would be enough if we would only just be able to be Zocha to be to greet the Shechina one time a month, that would be good enough. So there's this idea that somehow we're traveling from our current domain to greet the Shechina, which is clearly above 10 and presumably much higher than 10 also. So the Rashba has there's a Tshuva Rashba in which they deal with the question. Someone asked the Rashba, perhaps you can't do Kiddush Levana on Friday night because on Shabbos there's a problem of Tchumen. You're not allowed to go outside of the Tchum. And if we're really going in these stratospheric atmosphere and greeting the Shechina as a result of Kiddush Levana, perhaps we shouldn't be able to do Kiddush Levana on Friday night. And in fact, that is our minna. We don't generally do Kiddush Levana on Friday night. Just skipping to the answer, we don't do Kiddush Levana on Friday night. Unless it's, we do it on Matzah Shabbos preferably because we want to be in our Shabbos clothing. But the exception is if it's the last day. I'm sorry? That's the reason I think that they bring why you do it Davka Saturday night rather than Sunday night or Monday night. But the halacha is that if Friday night is the last night you're eligible to do Kiddush Levana, then we would do it even on Friday night. But the Rashba kind of grapples with this idea of perhaps going and greeting the Shechina would be a violation of Tchum Shabbos. So the Rashba says, first of all, that's not a problem. Because there's a Gemara in Erevin which talks about whether there's an idea of Tchumen Lamala Me'asara, right? Asara is the delineation between the earthly abode and the heavenly areas. And so there's the prohibition of Tchum is you're not allowed to carry you're not allowed to travel more than 2,000 amos. But what about if you're flying more than 2,000 amos? So back in the time of the Gemara, it was hard to imagine flying. Now we think of flying easily because we have airplanes. But the Gemara in Erevin talks about a story in which a certain memra that was said in Surah ended up in Pumpadisa on Shabbos. They said this memra. And the Gemara tries to bring that as proof that there's not any Isser of Tchumen Lamala Me'asara because presumably by some miraculous travel, it was a flying something. I don't know. Does it say camel? So the Gemara then rejects that and says, no, that's not a proof because maybe it was a shade that flew from Surah to Pumbedisa and brought this piece of Torah on Shabbos. But in any event, the Gemara leaves that discussion unresolved. It's not clear whether there's a prohibition of traveling Lamala Me'asara, meaning clearly there's a prohibition of traveling more than 2,000 amos on the ground. Does that prohibition extend to traveling in the air? The Gemara leaves it as a Baya de Livshita. The Gemara is not sure. And the Rashba says, Tchumin are Midrabanan, at least the way we paskin, Tchumin are Midrabanan. And so since the Gemara is not sure, it's a Safek Drabanan. And so therefore, there would be no problem, theoretically, of Tchumin Lamala Me'asara. That's kind of how we paskin in the end. So he says it wouldn't be a problem. And then he also says that Hun says that Kabbalah's Pnei Shechina means that you're literally traveling up high in the sky. Maybe you're greeting the Shechina from far away, you know. Aside from the fact that if the delineation is 10 tefachim, you're not violating Tchum Shabbos by just jumping up 10 tefachim anyway. So whatever it is, it's a kind of an esoteric discussion. And halacha l'maaseh, we say that...
So why should, once we say 10 tefachim is a different domain,
Why
should that set the height, the maximum or the minimum height of a sukkah?
Why should that set the minimum height of a sukkah? Why should that set? That's a very good question. Fundamentally, how is our Gemara answering the question?
To the maximum height, he said, because you can't see the schach, or you don't benefit from the schach. There's something related to the schach. Well, now we're saying below a certain height, like around this table height, that's too low.
It's just not comfortable.
Yeah, the top Rashi says the crux of the Al Kapuros here, Shema mina lumala me'asara mifsaka rishusa, that somehow that above 10 is where you cut off the rishus. So why should that mean that if it's below 10, I think the answer is that a sukkah has to be something of mamashus. You have to have a structure that's considered a structure. And because less than 10 is kind of considered tufel to the earth, it's almost as if you don't really have a structure. I think that's the idea. So you need to be kind of get off the ground. You need to have a structure that kind of breaks through the earthly domain and is now considered its own structure in its own right. That's the idea, I think. Okay, fine. So that's the first answer, the first approach to how you know that it's a minimum of 10 tefachim, because the 10 tefachim boundary is where it's considered now no longer the earth, no longer kind of batal to the ground. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Bishlama Aron Tisha, we know that the Aron is 9 tefachim. Dechsiv Vasu Aron Atzei Shitim, this is Mishnah's question, Vasu Aron Atzei Shitim, Amasayim V'chetzi Arko, 2.5 wide, V'ama V'chetzi Rachbo, 1.5 Amos long, V'ama V'chetzi Kolmoso, and 1.5 Amos tall. And as Rashi had pointed out, an Amma is 6 tefachim, so if an Amma and a half would be 9 tefachim, and now we know that an Aron is 9 tefachim. So we know clearly an Aron is 9 tefachim. El Kaporas Tefach Minoan. How do we know that the Kaporas, which was the cover for the Aron, is a Tefach? The Torah never describes the dimensions of a Kaporas. How do we know it's a Tefach to bring up our dimensions to 10? Detani Rabbi Chanina. Kol Kelim Sha'asa Moshe Nitna Bahen Torah Midas Archan Midas Rachvan Midas Komasan. All the Kelim that Moshe made, the Torah gives us their dimensions, their length, their width, and their height. Kapores, midas arka, umidas rachva nasna. When it comes to the kapores, we know the width and the length. However, midas komasa lo natna. We don't know the height. The Torah never specifies the height of the kapores. And so what do we do? Tsei ulamad mi pachos shebekelim. So if we don't know what the dimension of it is, what the height of it is, we should just look among the other kelim and figure out what's the smallest dimension given. And it must not be smaller than that thing, because the kaporas was one of the kelim, it was one of the accoutrements in the mikdash, in the mishkan. So it must not have been smaller than the smallest other kli. Shenemar v'asisa lo miskeres tefach saviv. When it describes the shulchan, it describes a miskeres, which was some kind of ring around, or some kind of, let's say, ring around the shulchan. So ma'la halon tefach, and just like when it comes to the miskeres, it describes that as a tefach, and that's presumably the smallest kli that it was out there. So afkan tefach, will learn a tzuchtel from the miskeres of the shulchan to the kapores of the aron. So the Gemara says, v'neilaf mekelim gufayu. The Gemara suggests, why don't you learn from the kelim themselves, meaning the miskeres was just an accoutrement to the shulchan, but it wasn't a kli in its own right. So why don't you, if you're looking for kind of the smallest kli that was described, don't look for the smallest accoutrement. There's another paradigm you can look for, which is the smallest kli itself, and the smallest kli itself is going to be more than a tefach. So the Gemara says, tefastam rubalo tefasta. Tefastam mua tefasta. As a general rule, when you're looking to make a tushtel to something, learn from one thing to another, you go with the minimum. And as Rashi explains at length, it's kind of, he kind of goes over and over again kind of this idea. If you're looking for a paradigm of something, so if you go for the smallest one, so then that's the thing that you're sure is the kind of minimum thing you can learn from. Whereas if you go from a bigger limud, who's to say that you should go with the bigger one? Because the smaller one is always included in the bigger one. And as Rashi said, look at the long Rashi, right? Tefasim ro kol davar she mashmo meruba umuat, where you have the possibility of learning from a larger thing and from a smaller thing. And tefasta samuat yafe tefasta. If you go with the smaller, so then you know you're okay, you're safe. The butzer meyachi lamashma, because you know there's nothing smaller. That's the minimum. But if you go with the bigger one, what's to say that you should learn from the bigger one? So always, it's always safer to learn kind of the minimum of something from the minimal other thing that's out there. That's the idea of tefastam ruba lo tefasta. And so here too, the misgeres around the shulchan is kind of the minimum thing that's out there. And don't go beyond that and presume that you should learn from the actual kelim, which would be bigger. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. We're not going to learn from kelim themselves, but But maybe the right paradigm to learn from is the tzitz. The tzitz was the head plate that the Kohen wore. And we're going to see now the dimension of the tzitz, the Tanya. As we have a bright, so tzitz dome kmintas shel zav. The tzitz was a thin plate of gold. Virachav shtei etzpos, and it was two etzpos wide, meaning it was it kind of extended along the forehead, and its height was two etzpos. Umukav meozen liozen, and it extended from one ear of the kohen to the other ear of the kohen. Vikasav alav shtei shitin, and there were two lines of writing, yud and a he, milmala. It would say yud k, and then it would say yud k vav k, the Hashem's name on the top. Vikodesh lamid lamata, and it would say kodesh la. The idea, their message that it was trying to convey was kodesh la Hashem. But it didn't want, it wanted Hashem's name to be prominent. Kind of the way it was set up, they wanted Hashem's name to be prominent. So the way Rashi understands this, it's Hashem's name was at top because that was prominent, then they would say Kodesh La. So you'd kind of read it from bottom to top. Tosfos says, how can that be? If you look at the tzitz, you'd want the message to be clear, Kodesh La Hashem. So Tosfos says that in fact, the Kodesh La was at the bottom, but that was kind of read, that was on the right. And then to the left of that was the Yudke Vavke higher. So you accomplish both. If you read it right to left, you'd read straight, Kodesh La Hashem. And yet Hashem's name was higher than the Kodesh La. So right, it would be like that, Kodesh La, and then Yudke Vavke at the top. That's the way Tosos understands it. To be, but Rashi understood it literally to mean that Lashem is at the top, Kodesh was at the bottom.
But the letters wouldn't be more than, if you have two lines, it means each letter wouldn't be more than a finger tall.
I guess that's right, yeah, because the top of the thing is right. Or even a little less, because you need some space, right? Yeah.
You can only read it if you're literally standing in front of the Kohen Gadol.
Right, yeah, it wasn't right. They're not very big, that's right. Fine, but that's the important part. And the important part is that it's only two fingers tall. So it was Yud K Lumala Kosh Lashem Lamed Lumata. Vamar Rav Lazar Rav Yossi. Ani Ra'isiv Baromi. Rav Lazar Rav Yossi went on a trip to Rome at one point, and he saw the storehouses where they had stored the booty from the Churban Beis Hamikdash. He said, I actually saw the tzitz in Rome. He says, I actually saw it, and it was actually written in one line. Fine.
So it really is in the Vatican.
Right. That's what they. That who knows?
That's what he says.
That's what he says. But he said, I saw it. Anyway, the Gemara says, so that's the question. So why don't we learn the dimension of the kapores from the tzitz, and learn that it's two etzbos, which would be smaller than a tefach. So the Gemara says, "Dun in kli me kli, vein dun in kli me tachshit." He says, "No, we're talking about two different categories. The kaporis itself was a kli or part of a kli. The tzitz was a tachshit, was a thing that was worn, and so therefore you can't learn one from the other. If you're looking for the minimum dimension that's expressed by the Torah in the context of a kli, you have to look at another kli, and so therefore the best paradigm for that is the miskeres around the shulchan." The Gemara says, "Venelof mizar." Why don't you learn it from the crown? There was a crown. Rashi explains around the top of the aron and the mizbeach. And why don't you learn it from that? Damar mar zar mashu. And that crown was just a little ornamental piece that was just very small. So there you have an example of something that's part of a kli that's much smaller than a tefach even. Why didn't you learn that the kapores is only that big? So the Gemara says, "Dun in kli me kli vein in dun in kli me hechsher kli." No, when we're learning the dimension of the miskeres, of the kapores, we want to learn it from an actual kli, because the kapores was an actual kli. It wasn't just an accoutrement to another kli. So the Gemara says, "Ihachi miskeres nami hechsher kli hu." If that's true, the miskeres, which was again some kind of ornamental part of the shulchan, that's also just an accoutrement to a kli, and therefore don't learn it from that. You should have to jump up to the next level, which would be have been bigger than a tefach. Gemara says, miskarto lemata haisa. Actually, the miskeres wasn't just an ornament at the top of the shulchan. The miskeres was a functional part of the shulchan itself. It was actually the base of the shulchan. And so just like the kaporas was the cover of the aron, the miskeres was the base of the shulchan, and that's a good thing to learn it from. It wasn't just an accoutrement to it. It wasn't just an ornamental piece. So Gemara says, "Hani chalman di amar miskar to lamata haisa." It turns out it's a machlokas. So that makes sense according to the opinion that the miskeres was at the bottom, at the base of the shulchan. Lamman di amar miskar to lamala haisa. But according to the opinion that the miskeres actually was at the top, which means it was just an ornament to it. It was just an accoutrement to the kli. Ma'iko lameimar. What are you going to say then? So the Gemara answers, Hai hechsher klihu. Then it is just an ornament to the kli. The Gemara says, okay, fine, we're going to go back to a different answer. Ela donin davar shenitna bo Torah mida, midavar shenitna bo Torah mida. We can only learn the shear of a kaporis from something where the Torah actually specified its mida, where by the miskeres, it specified a mida of tepach. Vayuchichu tzitz, v'zar shlonotna bahen Torah mida klal. Whereas by the tzitz and the zar, we know we have a tradition as to how big they were, but the Torah doesn't specify explicitly how big they were, and so therefore they can't be your paradigm from which to learn the dimension of a kaporis. You have to find the minimum of the smallest kli or the smallest hechsher kli, the smallest thing that the Torah actually specified a dimension for. That is the miskeres. And therefore, we conclude that the kaporis was, in fact, one tefach.
For the Mizbeach Nechoshev, the Chutzikra, I'm trying to remember, what was the delineation for the Chutzikra, for that middle point, right? Where the blood would either have to be
Matamala, yeah.
Right. Was that from the Zerah? Was that for that position? For the one that was Lamata? I'm trying to remember where...
Well, Lamata, that's on the Shulchan. That's not in the Mizbeach.
For the Chutzikra.
The Chutzikra, right? Yeah.
What was the defining point in the construction of the Mizbeah that indicated where the Chutzikra should be?
It specifies. It says there's an amma, a little lip at the bottom, and then it goes a few. I don't remember the dimensions.
Wasn't something ornamental? Wasn't something or anything?
It could be. I don't remember. Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure. But none of this talks about the mizbeach. This is all the shulchan. Yeah, the miskeres is the shulchan. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Fine. So that is our limud. That's how we're going to learn that the sukkah is ten tefachim from the fact that the aron was nine, which we just concluded, and then we just concluded also that the kaporos was one. Rav Huna Amar Mehecha. Rav Huna has a different source. Al pnei kaporos kedma. Again, he's just giving another source for how do we know that the kaporos was one? Because it says, apnei kaporos kedma, and he uses the word pnei, face. Vein panim pachos mitefach. And you never have a face. Rashi says, your typical face of a person is never smaller than a tefach, right? If a tefach is your fist, you can put your fist up to your face. Typically, you're not going to find a person whose face is smaller than a tefach. That's the minimum of a tefach. And so that's what his source is. Rav Huna says, it says Pnei Kaporis. It describes Kaporis in terms of a face. And so therefore it must be no smaller than a tefach. So the Gemara says, if that's true, that you're comparing it to a face, and that's how you're deriving the tefach, Ve'ema ka'ape dvar yuchni. Maybe you compare it to the face of this big bird. Rashi explains that the Gemara in Bechoros, it talks about this story with this massive bird that caused all this destruction. It laid an egg, and the egg made these things collapse, and whatever. This massive, massive bird. And this face of this massive bird was clearly more than a tefach. And so if your source of the kaporis is the fact that it describes it as a face, what's to say that you're talking about a face of a person? Maybe you're talking about a face of Big Bird, and that's more than a tefach. More than a tefach. The great answer is it falls back on the answer we gave before. When you have to choose between two paradigms to compare it to, tefasta merubalo, tefasta mua, tefasta always go with the minimal, because then you know you're sure that that's a good tzushtel. Whereas if you go with the bigger one, who's to know that you chose that over that? And so go tfasta merbo tfasta tfasta merbo tfasta. So where it says, okay, if you're going with the minimum face, ve'ema ka'apet tziparta, dezuder tuva. Maybe it's the face of a little bird, of like a sparrow or something like that, which is much less than a tevach. What makes you think that it's a person's face? So Amar Ravach, Bar Yaakov, Rav Huna pnei pnei gamar. Rav Huna was basing himself on a gzer shava, looking at the word pnei, ksiv hacha el pnei akaporis. As we said, it says pnei akaporis, ksiv hasa me'es pnei Yitzchak aviv. There's another place in Tanakh, namely in Bereishis, where it talks about the face of Yitzchak. This is by the Brachos. And it says Pnei Yitzchak Aviv, so there, and Pnei Yitzchak was a person. His face must have been not less than a tefach, and so therefore we're going to learn that the minimum shear of a kaporos is a tefach. V'neilaf mipanim shel mala. The Gemara says there's another instance where it says the word Pnei in Tanakh, namely the panim of Hashem. T'chsiv kiros Pnei Elokim v'atirtzeni. So the Gemara says again, tefasta merbo tefasta tefasta mo tefasta. If you have two choices, go with the smaller. V'neilaf mikruv. Why don't you learn from the face of a kruv? Again, another place in Tanakh where it says pnei, and it's referring to something bigger. V'neilaf kruv v'dechsiv el kaporis yu pnei hakruvim. Now I'm not sure why. And it says, oh, sorry, yeah. So again, we're going from to the smallest, right? So the point is that we didn't learn from the bird's face, which was very small, from Tfasum of Tfasta, because we had another instance of the word Pnei in Tanakh, namely Pnei Yitzchak. But the Gemara is now saying, if you're looking for an instance of Pnei in Tanakh, we have the Pnei Akruvim, which were smaller than Yitzchak's face. El Kaporz Yu Pnei Akruvim. Am Ravach Bar Yaakov, Gemiri Ein Pnei Akruvim, Pechusim Mitefach. So Ravach Bar Yaakov actually says we have a tradition that the face of the Kruvim was not less than a tefach, and so that's not going to trip us up. Rav Huna Nami Me'alcha Gamir. And in fact, the Gemara says that Rav Huna, when he says you learn to Pnei, it was actually learning to the Pnei Kruvim. Actually, the Gemara says it was the Pnei Kruvim that was the paradigm here, and because we have a tradition that the Pnei Kruvim were not less than a tefach, that's Rav Huna's source, that the Kaporas was a tefach. Umay Kruv. What is a kruv? The Gemara just says, by the way, Am Rabbi Avo Karabia. The kruvim were like children. The kruvim, this was the kruvim were these, right, the cherub, these golden ornaments on top of the aron that looked like angels with their wings up above, and their face was like a child's face. Shekem bebavo koren liyanuka ravia. Ravia is kind of the Aramaic word for a child. Okay. Amwe Abaye. So Baye says, Elamiata dhsif pnea echad pnea kruv, upnea sheni pnei adam, hainu kruv, hainu adam. So here the Baye interjects and says, it sounds like the kruv is not a baby, because a baby is a person. And we see from the description in Yechezkel where it says, pnea echad pnea kruv, upnea sheni pnei adam, it sounds like one was a person, one was a kruv. So that sounds like it's not a baby, because it's something other than an adam. So the Gemara says, no, it's describing two people. Ape Rivervei v'Ape Zutra. One's a big face, one's a small face. The point is the Kruv is the image of a face of a child. And again, we have a tradition that it was not less than a Tefach, which is Rav Huna's source for the idea that the Kaporis is a Tefach. Okay, now the Gemara is going to throw out an argument that's going to make us scrap everything we just did until now. The Gemara says, Umimai de chalala asara bar mischacha, ema bahade schacha. If your whole source for the minimum of a sukkah is just something that says simply 10 tfachim and nothing else, what's to say that that means you need a hollow space of 10 tfachim and then the schach starts? Maybe you're looking at the sukkah from the outside and the whole structure of the sukkah, including the schach, that's 10. So the Gemara, I guess, seems to have an assumption that when we learned in the Mishnah that the minimum shear of a sukkah is 10 tefachim, it means the hollowed out area is 10 tefachim. Mm-hmm. But if the whole source, again, is just from the dimensions of the shulchan, the aron, there was not a hollowed out area of the Aron that was 10. It was the whole Aron and Kaporis that was 10. And so this is not a very good source for us to teach us that the minimum shear of the hollowed out area of the sukkah is 10. And so we're going to scrap everything we did until now and try to figure out a source that teaches us that the hollowed out, that the minimum area of the hollowed out area of the sukkah is 10 tefachim. Ela mi beis ulman gamar. We're going to learn it from the dimensions of the beis hamikdash itself. So again, forget everything about the aron and the kaporas. This is a new limud. Mi beis ulman gamar. Dichsiv. It says in the pasuk in Malachim Aleph, Va'bayis asher bana hamelach Shlomo la'Hashem, shishim ama arko. It was 60 amos wide. Vesrim rachvo, and 20 amos long, ushloshim ama komaso, and is 30 amos tall. Right, when you picture the tall part of the Beis HaMikdash, it was 30 amos, which is what, about 90 feet tall. It was about 45 feet tall. Right, ama is about a foot and a half. So it was 45 feet, it was shloshim ama komaso, 30 amos. Uksiv, komas hakruv ha'echad eser ba'ama. The kruv, again, going back to the Aron, the kruv on top of the Aron was 10 amos tall. V'chena kruv asheni, the other kruv was also 10 amos tall. V'tanya, we have a brace that says, Mematzinu bebeis olamim kruvim b'shlush habayis tein omdim. Just like when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, the kruvim stood at one-third of the height of the structure, because the structure we just said was 30 amos tall. The kruvim were each 10 amos tall. That means each kruv was one-third of the height of the structure. So mishkanami, when it comes to the mishkan also, kruvim bishlish habayis einomdim. The kruvim were also one-third of the height of the structure of the mishkan. Mishkan kamahave, how tall was the mishkan? Eser amos, it was 10 amos tall. Dichsiv eser amos orach hakeresh. So the mishkan was 10 amos tall, which means that what? Kamahave luhu shisin poshli, which means that the mishkan was 60 tfachim tall, right? Because there's 6 tfachim in every ama. So the mishkan was 60 tfachim tall. Talse kamahave, what's a third of that? A third of 60 is esrim poshli, is 20 tfachim tall. So each kruv was 20 tfachim tall. Dala sarad, and we're talking about the elevation, the height at which its top stood at. Now, it got a head start because the kruv stood on top of the aron. So dala sarad aron, the aron itself was 10 tfachim tall. I'm sorry, the aron the kaparis, as we know from before, the aron itself was 9 tfachim, the kaparis was 1 tefach. So if the kruv is first, the feet of the kruv is first sitting on the top of the kaparis, so then you have to subtract 10 from the aron and the kaporas, and pashu asara. That means that if you're counting from the foot of the kruv to the head of the kruv, the top of the kruv, it's going to be 10 tfachim tall. Because again, the kruv itself stood, its height was 20 tfachim off the ground. The first 10 were taken up by the aron and the kaporas, so the kruv itself was 10 tfachim tall. Uksiv. And then it says, "Vayu akruvim porsei knafayim lamala, so chim v'kanfeyam al kaporis." The kruvim had their wings up above, right? If you ever see the picture of the kruvim, the wings weren't just like bird wings that were spread out. The wings jutted up, so you'd have the whole kind of body of the kruv, and then the wings came out of its shoulders and jutted up. Didn't kind of share the space; they added to the height. That's the pasuk here, vayukruvim parsei knafayim lamala sochim lekan veyam al kapores. Kariya rachmana sechacha lamala me'asara. So here we see that the Torah is describing the schach, right, sochachin bekan veyam, that it was a cover, that the kruv was covered by its wings above it, and as we just described, those wings are jutting up to cover an area above 10. Meaning the dimensions of the 20 off the ground is until you get to the wing, and then the wing goes above that. So we see here that the wing is 10 tfachim from the, it basically starts 10 tefachim from the foot of the kruv. And that's our source, right? That seems to be a source that shows that Rashi says, Alma tachas kanfema, sar tefachim chalal ad a kaporis v'kargoi sukkah, and it refers to it as a sukkah. So that's our source that you need a area, a clearance, a hollow area of 10 tefachim before the sukkah, before the schach starts. So the Gemara says, Mimai dekad finu ilu rishayu kaimi. What's to say that the wings started right above their head so that you have a full 10 clearance under the wings? Dumalahadi rishayu kaimi. Maybe they started, maybe the wings started at the same elevation of the head. So then you'd be left with that problem that you don't have a full clearance of a 10 tefach clearance, 10 tefach hollow area. Amar Avacha bar Yaakov l'malaksiv, it says above. Then so that teaches you that the wings started fully above. Ema d'midli tuva, maybe they were higher because it says l'mala. So what's to say that they started right at the 10 tefachim? We just said the kruvim were 20 tefachim off the ground, but maybe the wings kind of, I don't know, maybe kind of there was like a part that kind of jutted out, and then the wings itself started high, which would mean that the sukkah could be even more than 10 tefachim. Gemara says, Miksiv l'malo malo. It doesn't say above. It says l'malo, as if to say it starts immediately at the height of the 10. Okay, so all that dimension, all those dimensions that we just said, assumed that a amma consists of 6 tefachim, and that's how we got to the calculation that the kruvim were 20 off the ground, and therefore 10 off the feet. So Hanichala Rabbi Meir Damar Kol Amos Hayu Bein Onios. That makes sense according to Rabbi Meir, who says that an Amma consists of 6 Tfachim Bein Onios, 6 middle-sized Tfachim. El Rabbi Yehuda Damar Amma Shal Binyan Shisha Tfachim Vishal Kela Chamisha. Rabbi Yehuda holds that there is different types of Amos. The Amos of structures were 6 Tfachim, it's true, but Amos of the Kelim were 5 Tfachim. So then, Ma'ikel Omeimar, that's going to throw all our calculations off if you hold that an Amma is in fact 5 tefachim. So for Rabbi Yehuda, we have a big problem. None of our calculations are going to make sense, and we don't have a source then for the fact that the sukkah has to be 10 tefachim hollow, right? Because we're going to say, now we're going to run through the calculations according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's an Amma is 5, so then Aron v'kaporis kamahavela hu temanyo palga. It turns out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if an Amma is 5 tefachim, then the Aron and Kaporis are going to be 8.5 tefachim, right? Because it was 1.5 Amos. If an Amma is 5, that gets you to 7.5 tefachim, right? So the Aron is 7.5 tefachim. Then you have the Kaporis is 1 tefach. That gives you an Aron and Kaporis of 8.5 tefachim. Pashu chad sari upalga. You're left with a with a gap of 1.5 tefachim, right? It's not 10 tefachim. So the Gemara says, "Ema sukkah adahave chad sari upalga," and then maybe. Oh, right. 1 second. So again, counting the kruvim, you're going to be left with if the kruvim are 20 tefachim off the ground, you're going to be left with 11.5. So sukkah should then be 11.5 from the foot of the kruv, which started at 8.5 tefachim off the ground until 20, you're going to be left with 11.5, and so maybe the sukkah should be 11.5, not 10. So what's going on? How are you going to do this with Rabbi Yehuda? So Gemara says, okay, we're going to scrap that. According to Rabbi Yehuda, none of this is going to work. El Rabbi Yehuda, hilchasa gemirila. Rabbi Yehuda simply had halachah moshe misinei. We had a tradition that the minimum height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim high. And that's logical. That's consistent because Damar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Shiurin Chatzitzin Mechitzin Halacha Moshe Misinai. We have a rule that appears throughout Shas that there are 3 things that are Halacha Moshe Misinai that are purely tradition. We don't derive them from Psukim. We don't derive them from any Limudim specifically, but we have a tradition Halacha Moshe Misinai, and that is Shiurin when it comes to minimal Shiurim, like Kazayas and things like that. Chatzitzin. What's considered a chatzitza for, let's say, going to the mikvah? The idea that that it has to be a rubo hamakbid, that it's only considered a chatzitza if it's like covering most of the body and that you're makbid on it. right? Most of the things that we think of as chatzitzas nowadays, like a woman's nail polish, for example, is only midrabanan, because midaraisa, it would have to cover the rove. Or for example, like, you know, the example I give is hair, right? If you have like hair knotted together or something, that's considered a chatzitza. But it's only if it's covering most of the hair and the woman is makbid on it that she cares about it, and it's kind of an annoyance to her. That's a shir min ha'alchal mushami sinai. And then finally, mechitzin, the shir of a mechitza, is also ha'alchal mushami sinai. And so, as Rashi points out, I believe, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the shir of a sukkah would fall under the category of a mechitza, because we're counting kind of the wall leading up to the schach, and so the minimum shir of mechitza is ha'alchal mushami sinai, and he's going to learn that simply from tradition, that's 10 tefachim, not from the limudim we just did, because as we saw, that's not compatible with Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of how big an amma is. And then the Gemara is just in the last few lines going to introduce this sugya of shiurin chatzitza mechitza ha'alchal mushami sinai. So it starts by saying shiurin. Shiurin d'oraisa. So the Gemara challenges that. And what do you mean shiurin is a ha'alchal mushami sinai? Shiurin d'oraisa ninu. Shiurin, we learn from a pasuk, dichsev, eretz chito sora v'gefen etayim rav rimon, eretz yeshem and dvash. So the pashup shot of that pasuk is that it's describing the bounty of Eretz Yisrael, that the Eretz Yisrael consists of wheat and barley and dates and pomegranates and grapes, etc. But we darshan this pasuk to be referring specifically to shiurin, to some of the requirements of shiurin that we have in Kol Torah Kula. V'am Rav Chanin, Rav Chanin called pasuk hazeh l'shiurin nemar. Each of the items listed in this pasuk is to teach you a different shiur. So, for example, chita l'beis ha-menuga. So chita is coming to teach you the minimum, for how long you have to be in a house that has tzaras in order for your kelim to become tameh. Ditnan hanichnas l'beis ha-menuga v'kelav al kseifav. You're holding your stuff on your shoulder. V'sandala v'tabosav biyado. You're holding your rings and your sandals in your hands. Hu v'hein tamei miyad. They and you are tamei immediately. Hayolavush kelav v'sandala v'raglo v'tabosav v'atzbosav. If you're hayolavush kelav, if you're wearing your clothing and you're wearing your sandals and you're wearing your rings, hu tamei miyad. So your body is tamei immediately. V'hein torin ad shiyisha b'chtei achilas pras. And they become tamei only after time elapses where they're in this space hamenuga for more than a kedei achilas pras. And what's a kedei achilas pras? A kedei achilas pras is how long it would take to eat a certain amount of a grain item, like a piece of bread. And it says specifically pas chitin v'lo pas seorin. It would be how long it takes to eat a pas made out of chitin, but not pas seorin. So that's derived from the word chita in that pasuk. And the Gemara is going to go on to explain on daf vav all the other shiurim that are learned from each of the words in Eretz Chita, Sora, Gefen, Tena, etc. But the main point that we're leaving daf hey with is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't learn the minimum shiur of a sukkah from any of the dimensions or any of the psukkim we learned from. He just has it as a straight halacha moshe misinai based on this idea of shiurin chatzitza mechitza and halacha moshe misinai, whereas the other opinion was that the source is the kruv, and we rejected the earlier idea that the source is from the Aaron and Kaporis itself.
Go ahead.
Okay.